Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the kids in the BC. It is Saturday, the Ides of August, down on Domini 2015, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Everybody, it seems, dislikes Windows 10's forced updates. It's very simple. Updates should be automatic, but the option to disable individual patches should exist if a buggy one is released, like, say, three of them in the last 2 weeks. But Microsoft clearly does not agree because Windows 10's forced updates just got scarier. Windows 10 is not just forcing feature... Hi, how are you? Windows 10 is not just forcing feature... I need to learn to write words that don't come next to each other. Windows 10 is not just forcing feature, driver, and security updates on users anymore. It is also removing user control over Windows Store app updates. The option to toggle updates automatically, update apps automatically in the Windows Store settings, has been grayed out. Strangely, Microsoft has made no formal announcement about this move or what motivated it. In fact, there isn't even any information related to the disabled settings on the Microsoft and Windows 10 websites. The only reference found anywhere relates to Windows 8.1, where the setting still works. All of which creates new concerns. You may not like Windows 10 forced updates, but in upgrading, you made the choice to accept them. This is very different from Microsoft disabling user control options without warning or explanation. You didn't make that choice. In fairness to Microsoft, the company's end user license agreement does include apps, as well as Windows updates, which I know you didn't read that. Nobody reads the end user license agreement. But it warns, by accepting this agreement, you agree to receive these types of automatic updates without any additional notice. So you agreed to that. Then again, the EULA itself, which customers obviously never read, is so broad, it basically gives Microsoft the freedom to do whatever it wants. Notably, this section on privacy reads, "We will access, disclose, and preserve personal data, including your content, such as the content of your emails, other privacy communications, other private communications, or files in private folders, when we have a good faith belief that doing so is necessary." That's right. You agreed to that. Oh, I really should have read that in the Nixon voice. That really would have been a lot more evil in the Nixon voice. All of which means Windows 10 has the right to install whatever it wants on your system without notice and to read and disclose all of your personal information and files when it sees fit, even with files you place in private folders. Of course, these rules should be in place only for the worst-case scenarios, but the silent change to Windows app update shows Microsoft has now set a precedent for doing whatever the heck it likes, whenever the heck it likes. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Win 10 auto updates just got worse? And your choices are, I'm starting to get angry, I'm starting to get worried, I'm this close to starting to care, and Win what now? As expected, Win what now is ahead with almost half the votes, followed by I'm this close to starting to care, followed by I'm starting to get angry and I'm starting to get worried. If I'm starting to get angry and or I'm starting to get worried, don't become the number one choice. You people have not been paying attention. At any rate, I know you'll have more to say about this. So you can leave a comment in the forums. All you do is go down on the right until you see fascinating stuff. The top link is the forums. The second forum is the poll discussion. And the top item in the poll discussion is 15 August 15. Win 10 auto updates just got worse. We've already got a couple of, we've got three comments in there now, and you can join in the fun there.
Well, we've been telling folks, you know, to be very cautious installing this because, like anything else, you know, we tell the pioneers by the arrows in their backs. I've got one computer right now. Gentleman tried installing the Windows 10 over Windows 7. And evidently, it didn't go in fully. Because there's, right now, it's like it's in limbo. It's starting up in 10. But, you know, over in the right-hand corner, left-hand corner, when you click on that, you should be able to get that menu bar and switch things. Matter of fact, switch to the old Windows Start button and
go back to Windows 7.
And, well, no, not even that. Just, I can't get there. But with, like, old Windows 8, you know how you click down in the lower right-hand corner?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the other menu would come up, and you'd be able to scroll over, and it'd list them all alphabetically
right.
by categories and all that. That's not even there. So this is
if
like...
you hit the Windows key,
nope,
does it come up? Wow.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This really got mucked up in that it got part of 10 in, but it didn't get it fully in.
Right, right, right.
So it's one of those things, because the reason he wants to go back to 7, he found out that Microsoft Money doesn't work with Windows 10.
Yeah, Microsoft doesn't, yeah.
Microsoft didn't.
And Microsoft Money was discontinued like a decade ago.
Yeah.
And they put out a free version to that will let you convert your file to
Quicken
or other financial program. But that's the same thing that happens in the Mac world, too. People keep their computers so long that when they finally do upgrade, all of their most important favorite software doesn't work.
Right. Anyway, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, just like Dennis did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Hi, guys. I was having trouble with my desktop box, and the CPU usage was pegged at 100%. So I did the whole security tangle, and the only thing I couldn't do in safe mode was Avast. So I did anti-spyware and Malwarebytes first, and then I went and rebooted and did Avast. For all of those things, you know, Sting, all those other things, I found absolutely nothing.
Right.
The problem disappeared. But I'm not sure what it is. But the question I have is, if I am able to pull out the drive because I have another box and I could plug that drive in. You know, I have a USB adapter. What do you call it? Whatever drive it is to USB,
right,
so I can plug it into the box. If there is something malware of some sort, would I infect my other box by doing that?
The only way you would infect your other box is by either booting that drive or running a program from that drive.
Oh, okay.
So as long as you don't do that, you're fairly safe. Here's the thing.
But scan that drive when you're done with everything else, too,
well,
just in case.
The first thing you do is scan it, and then whatever else you're going to do, the last thing you do is scan it again. But this is one of the reasons that I say, you know, bring it to a reputable dealer, because one of the things they do is many of them have systems where they can lock the hard drive. They can remove. I had a friend who did that in his home system. He put a switch in the write line. So if he flipped the switch one way, he could write to that drive. If he flipped the switch the other way, he couldn't. So it was a locked.
Oh,
it's a lockable hard drive.
Yeah, I wouldn't have the foggiest idea how to do that.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's, you know, you bring it to a reputable dealer, and many of them can do that. Or if they infect their own machines, well, that's on them.
May I assume, since I didn't find anything, that I don't have anything?
No. Because many of the viruses do hide. That's why, you can assume you don't have any of the normal things.
Yeah.
There are one or two very high-end viruses, worms, whatever you want to call them, malware, that hide as rootkits. And really the only way you can fight those is what you're suggesting, take the drive out and put it in another machine. As long as you don't boot that drive or run anything from that drive, and then the first thing you do is scan it, you should be fine.
So a rootkit, if the system is not booted and there's a rootkit, it would show up possibly by my scanning that drive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because the reason it doesn't show up in your system is because it's already active. That's what it activates at boot, which is why it's called a boot virus.
Okay.
And it then hides itself from the virus. But if it hasn't activated, it can't hide.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, that's good. That's at least a possibility that I can check out then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. Thanks, guys. Yep.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really the Tango will handle 95%.
Yeah, it's just those root kits that right. are the bugger. And like I say, unless you have the utilities, like I do at my shop, to pull that hard drive out to isolate it, because that's the whole thing. It's a root, meaning, folks, that, you know, it's right there at the base. When you boot that up, it's one of the
generally
first few things,
the first
that gets,
things that run.
Yeah, gets loaded in right, matter of fact, ahead of the operating system.
Right, and so therefore it can protect itself, whereas when you have a regular virus, the operating system has already run, and so it can't protect itself from being discovered. But a rootkit, because it boots before the operating system, controls everything in the operating system, and therefore, including the antivirus programs that run, and therefore can hide from them. Simply report that it's not there, essentially.
Oh, hey, yeah, you're not infected.
Right, exactly. Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's up?
Hey, guys. I have a quick question for you. So, went out last night, anniversary, and...
Congratulations. How many years?
5.
Tomorrow's my 35th.
Wow, awesome.
So I'll tell you, the first 35 are pretty cool.
Very cool. Well, the first 5 have been amazing.
Yep.
So, anyway, get home and decide to, you know, check the email and what have you.
Right.
And I haven't exactly finished imbibing yet. apparently my MacBook Pro has had its last drink.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
It's first and last?
For like the last 4 years, 5 years, this is, like, you know me, guys. I've yeah. called like 3 times in the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
But anyway, point being, for the last 4 to 5 years, I think the MagSafe adapter, the green light will come on sometimes nothing, but now it's just not coming on at all, and it's not doing a thing. When I hit I'm sorry if you have anything to say. Should I just anyway?
Go ahead.
I immediately turned it upside down and, you know, tried to alleviate any sort of moisture with, you know, paper towel, tissue, what have you, and left it upside down all night.
Yeah. Did this drink have any sugar content
yes.
above and beyond the alcohol?
It is a certain color of a certain beer, if you know what I mean, around here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, boy.
But that yeah. wouldn't be its first, by the way.
Well, yeah, but, you know, sometimes there's always
last.
That one
yeah.
over the line.
I think it's just had one too many.
Yeah, one of the things you should do is unplug the power and remove remove the battery.
Right.
On recent Mac models for the last 3 or 4 years now, the batteries are not user removable, so
right.
that's hard to do. Because it's running power through the liquid is what causes the components to fail and corrode and get mucked
yeah,
up.
Yeah, no, I immediately pulled the power cord as well.
Yeah.
Is
it a 13-inch or 15-inch?
15-inch, late 2008. Hasn't had a battery in it for about, I'd say, a year, year and a half, just because money's been tight and it was bulging anyway.
Oh, yep. We've seen that happen when When batteries reach the end of their useful lifetime, they may start swelling.
Yeah.
And what often happens is the battery is under the trackpad.
Yeah.
And so it swells up and stops the trackpad from working.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I was
wondering why
my trackpad not working. I went out and bought a wireless mouse.
Yeah. Right.
So there are companies that will do a spill repair.
Mm-hmm.
15-inch 2008, you're looking at about $700.
Whoa.
Which is
what about data recovery at that point?
Well, if you're lucky, the hard drive is okay, and that can be just pulled out and put into a chassis.
Right, exactly. All right.
Okay, I'm sorry, we got to take a break. Did that answer your question, Tom?
Absolutely. I just wanted to know, is there anything that I'm not doing?
Okay, hold on. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Tom from Brockport, you, me, everybody, Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Okay, apparently we've been doing this too long and we're just relaxed. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, blah, blah, blah. Okay.
What I have to deal with.
Yeah.
So,
I think we lost Tom, but we have an answer for him.
Well, yeah, going back, there's sort of general things that, you know, spilling anything into the computer is bad. Really bad
for any device,
for any, you know, any
phones, anything right. else.
And if you can remove the battery, do so immediately, because you don't want power going through liquid. That's bad. But even a lot of the PCs now are coming with sealed batteries, so you can't take the battery out anymore.
Yep.
If you have a what's the word I want? Humidor. You can dry out your computer,
right?
Because so it's a dry heat. You want to evaporate the fluid. Turning it upside down is handy if you spilled into the top, and then it may just muck up the keyboard, because with typical laptops, the logic board is under the keyboard.
Right.
So sort of the, you know, of course, don't try not to spill anything anyway. But have good backups just in case. It sounded like Tom didn't have a backup because he was asking about recovery. Generally speaking, the hard drive can be removed and put into a chassis or another computer. The hard drives are a sealed unit themselves. Although if the controller card on the hard drive does get corroded, that's a problem now too. But there's some preventive measures that you can take. There are rubber keyboard guards you can get that cover your keyboard. And so if you do spill something, it doesn't get down in the computer. It also keeps your keys clean, and you can take them off and wash them. And it keeps you from rubbing the key tops off.
Right.
Some people come in with some pretty old computers where the letters are missing from their keyboard because they've just rubbed them off by using them so much.
Yeah, I have a laptop like that.
Yeah. But, you know, so backup. Always have a backup, at least one backup, if not two or three.
Right. And I realize money is tight for a lot of people these days, but at this point, if it doesn't come back on its own, I'm not entirely certain what's left to do.
Yeah, and there are companies, as I said, that do spill repair. They're expensive because it's a soldering iron and an oscilloscope, and replacing components on the board that may have been corroded and damaged. You can get, you know, half terabyte, you know, 500 gig terabyte hard drive, you know, under $100, and that can be your backup drive. So spend $100 to get your backup running, or, you know, spend $500-$700 getting your spill repaired.
Right. Sadly, that's true.
Yeah.
All right. Before we go back to the phones, let me just remind you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. You can text us at 585-209-9010. You can listen live on Jazz 90.1. Or you can watch us on our very own YouTube channel. And if you didn't write all of that down instantly as I said it, you can just go to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And look over on the right-hand column, and you'll see all of that stuff listed. as we go back to the phone and talk to Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's up?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. A pretty basic, I think, Windows 10 question, and I probably already know the answer, but I wanted to query you guys to see what you thought. I believe I have not done it yet because I've not received my free thing to do it,
right,
or update. But do I want to do a complete install or just install it with leaving my programs that are already on my machine in my machine?
Well,
wiping everything out.
Right. If you do a clean install, you will lose all the programs you've installed and all the data that you have on the drive.
Right, which I have backed up and also have disks or whatever for.
Then the choice becomes yours if you've got everything. My preference is install clean, because then you don't bring a lot of cruft along with the registry for all the programs you've loaded and unloaded in the last however many years you've owned that machine.
Right, and that's what I kind of figured, too. It's always a good thing, at least I've been told, it's a good thing to do that if you can.
Right, right, right.
Because we've heard of problems, both ways.
Yeah.
Installing over top of the existing Windows 7, if something went wrong in the download and there was a hiccup somewhere or hiccup during the install, that can leave you with an unstable, unusable machine.
Right. Also be aware that not every program will work with Windows 10 just yet. So you might do a little more research into all the programs you're running.
Okay.
If you're running just, Word and Excel and like that stuff, probably
I've got
not a problem.
Couple other little things that,
right,
aren't that old, but,
Right. Particularly the smaller programs from independent vendors may not be upgraded in quite as fast as you'd like.
Right.
So, and like you said, you've got some time, so now's the time to deal with that. But one of the things you absolutely want to make sure of is that not only you have backups, but they're all good backups, and they're all in good shape.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, great. Thanks for the information. It sounds like I'm probably heading down the right road, I hope.
Yeah, it sounds like it to me.
Just waiting for them to say it's my turn, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Have fun. Thanks.
We had a customer bring in their computer because they were upgrading to a new model. And when she had like 200 gigs of data used on the hard drive. And when we copied it to the new hard drive, we only got 10 gigs. Turns out she had disk encryption turned on. Or not disk encryption, user folder encryption.
Okay.
And in the Apple, they call that File Vault, where you can encrypt your home folder. What probably happened, and she didn't understand it, because people don't understand computer messages.
Right.
You cannot back up a File Vault home folder when you're logged into your account.
What?
You have to log out so it can back up. And so she never backed up her own user data because she apparently never logged out of the account.
Wow.
Now,
how does it back it up if it's encrypted and you're not logged in?
Theoretically, it shouldn't, because you got to give it the password.
Yes, thank you.
Well, so no, it backs up. The way it works is it's a sparse image file, a single file that contains all your data. So it just backs that up. It doesn't need to see inside the image. It just backs up the image.
Okay, that's true.
That's
okay,
true.
I get that.
Now, in later OSs, I think 10.8, 10.9, File Vault 2 is whole disk encryption, rather than just home folder, so the backup can work. The problem I have, especially with these encryptions, is that all your data is stored as a blob of noise, and your password will decrypt the blob of noise into a file.
Right.
If one bit fails out of the billions of bits on your drive,
you're done.
All your data is lost, most likely.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah.
So I hate encryption. for that reason, because we've had so many people bring their computers in to get their data back, and with OS 10.10 Yosemite, when you set up your new computer, it asks you, "Hey, do you want to turn on encryption?" And you say, "Okay,"
because that sounds like a good thing.
It sounds like a good thing. It is a good thing if you have secrets you don't want people to read,
right,
or company stuff like that. But it makes having a backup even more important, Because if you lose, you know, one or two bits on your drive, you all of your data is gone because it's just a blob of noise,
right?
Without decrypting it. So you can't make sure you have a good backup. Make sure the backup is working. Make sure it's backing up everything. Now you can go in the Mac, you can go into your backup drive and do a get info on the folder that ran. And so if she happened to have noticed it was 200 gigs,
right?
And it wasn't. It was only 10.
Right.
So it's very frustrating, even when you think it's working.
Let me give you all listening out there a reality check. If you have never restored any of your data, you do not know if your backups are any good.
They may have run. They may have not given you an error, but you don't know if it actually is intact.
Right. So those of you tell me I back up every night, guess what? I don't actually care. The question is, have you ever restored any file ever? If the answer to that is no, then in fact you have no idea if your backups are any good.
Wasn't that the problem with Windows backup for a long time? The backup was great, but the restore program never worked.
Yep. So if you have never done a restore, and I don't mean restore your whole hard drive, just do a spot check. Once a week, once a month, however paranoid you actually are, grab one file out of your backup and restore it.
Yep.
Maybe a test file. Create a test file so you don't care if you overwrite it or whatever happens. And then restore that file every once in a while and make sure it comes back, because if it doesn't, you don't really have a backup.
And if you get a message, an error message you don't understand, write it down, take a picture of it, and find someone that does understand.
Right. That's exactly right.
While Dave is still on the phone, have you seen the new Microsoft Windows 10 commercial with the babies?
No.
A bunch of babies, and so it's cute, and the voiceover is, isn't it nice? They'll never have to use a password.
Oh, I did see that one. Yeah. That kid has an awful cute smile.
Windows 10 face recognition.
You got to say that one,
I'm thinking, okay, that means we're stuck with Windows 10 for the next 15 years?
Ever, forever.
Yeah.
Windows now is going to become, Microsoft has already said this, Windows 10 is the last version of Windows.
They'll probably stop giving it a number.
It's the second last, the penultimate version of Windows. The ultimate version will just be called Windows. There will not be a number, and it will be a subscription service. If you want Windows, you will pay Microsoft every year to have it. And it's that simple. There's no other choice.
I apologize. That was the boss. I was...
But hang up on him. We're doing a radio show. What does he think this is? We're professionals. or
reasonable facsimile zero.
We'll do until one show up. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Judy from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Judy. What's up?
Well, I went to soundbites.org, and it's not there.
Uh-oh.
It says web server's default page.
Really? When did that happen?
I started yesterday, and I checked it again today, and I went to the wiki links, and linked from there, it still comes up the same.
That's interesting, because I'm looking at it right now. So is Steve. Try doing a refresh. I don't know I'm in the process, and it's an involved process, because it's freaking WordPress, but I'm in the process of moving soundbites from one server to another, so hopefully these issues will go away. But you're right, every once in a while the thing just disappears for no known reason.
It says Parallels Plesk panel, in case you're interested.
I don't know what to tell you, because I'm looking right at it.
You can try clearing your cache and then reload it again.
Right, you can clear your cache. That will help. The other thing you might try is, instead of hitting the F5, do a Control R, or actually click in the address bar and retype the soundbites.org and hit enter.
I will do that.
Sometimes that works, but you may have to try that before you clear the cache, I really don't know what to tell you, because I'm looking right at it. Sorry.
We've had that happen here in the studio, where Nick gets it and I don't, or vice versa.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's very, very weird. And we're just going to move to a new server.
Okay.
But it's complex, because it's complex. But I'll work on it.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Yeah, not sure what's...
For a while, I thought it was because it, if you put the W's in, it worked, and if you didn't put the W's in, it didn't, or vice versa. But it should work either way.
It should work either way.
With or without the W's,
right,
yeah.
Right. So that's another thing to try, Judy. If you put in www, try it without. If you didn't, put in the www.soundbites.org. I don't have a clue. And we're just, it's been happening enough and we can't figure it out enough. We'll just move. And we'll see what happens when I move. That'll be a lot easier than spending the next 2 years trying to figure out what the hell's going on. Because it happens intermittently.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so if it happens at 2 in the morning, by the time I see it the next morning, I got nothing.
Right, and it's probably already fixed itself.
Right, or it's already, right.
Sometimes things that break themselves will fix themselves.
That's exactly right, but we want everybody to be able to get to the Soundbites home, particularly during the show would be nice, so we're just going to move it to another server, but that's like a military campaign, I just got to make it happen. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That is right. It is Soundbites right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Before we go back to the phones, normally on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we are in Second Life, continuing the merriment and mayhem that we do on the show here. We continue it there. I just want to let everybody know that since, as I mentioned earlier, tomorrow is my 35th wedding anniversary, I just might not make it to Second Life tomorrow night. I apologize, but I just need everybody to know that. I might, but I likely will not.
And I need to apologize that I haven't been there the last few weeks.
Well, you've had an excuse.
I've been sick, and that's now past my bedtime.
Yeah. I'm retired. I don't have a bedtime anymore.
Yeah.
I'm looking at my watch the other day, and I'm thinking it's 2:30 in the morning. I should probably think about going to bed.
Yeah.
I've looked at all the cat pictures on the internet, so I might as well do something else. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's up?
How you doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear us?
Yes. I'm in my car. It's a speakerphone, so I feel bad.
That's okay, as long as you pull over. Oh, you're in the speakerphone, so I suppose that's okay. What's up?
So anyways, yes. So Brockport again, and it was my 30th anniversary a few weeks ago.
Good
so.
For you.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yes, 30 years is good.
My 20th a couple weeks ago, too.
There you go. 10 of the best years of my life. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. two questions. The main first question is Windows 10. I have a new Dell computer that came with Windows 8, and... it seems like Dell is in control of doing any updates.
Yes.
Does that make sense to you?
It does to a point. Microsoft will certainly update the operating system, but whether or not all of the Dell utilities update, that's up to Dell.
Okay.
What about the hardware drivers? Would that come from Microsoft or Dell?
Well, that's going to come from Dell. I had that issue. I have an Asus laptop, and Windows 10 updated... But the nifty features that turn it into a tablet and shut off the keyboard when that happens and do the two-finger scrolling on the trackpad, those went away. And they just had another update from Asus, and the trackpad came back. This afternoon I'll try the other thing. I just didn't try it yet. So, there's really two issues here. One is Windows itself and all of the apps that you have downloaded from Microsoft. Microsoft controls those.
But they do, okay.
But the hardware stuff, Dell controls.
Well, I may be confused, but it seems that if I get an update of any kind, it all goes through Dell. You know, I didn't really notice a Windows update like I would traditionally notice.
Right.
Just a Dell update. So I would guess that Dell would want to push Windows 10 then, right?
Yeah, it may well be that Microsoft and Dell have a different deal. You know, Dell's big enough. They may have an entirely different deal with Microsoft. But the ones I've seen up till now were all Microsoft did their stuff and the hardware manufacturer updated the hardware drivers.
Okay, good.
Specific hardware drivers.
I have a second question.
Yeah.
I had a laptop, pretty old, and over the last 6 months, which is why I got the Dell, the video card or something went on it. So I wanted to get the drive out and get some stuff off the drive. And so I plugged it into a USB thing, you know, with the power and the cable. It didn't mount on any computer. I do have a couple older computers. Should I try to put it in there as a second disk and try to mount it?
It certainly cannot hurt.
Okay.
There are a couple of tricks to mounting a USB drive on another machine, and one is whether or not the operating system will let you do that. And secondly is how old is the drive, and is it, in fact, spinning up? Can you hear it?
Yes.
Spinning up. Do you see a light maybe on the chassis somewhere that says it's getting power? Many of the USB drive enclosures require power. So if you've plugged them into a USB connector that doesn't offer power,
right,
you won't get, it won't spin up, it won't run.
Right. It could also be the enclosure. I've been seeing lately a lot of the enclosures failing because they're just simple mechanisms in there, but a diode or anything else on a number of them have been failing, and it might not be the drive.
Okay.
You know, I mean, so you're going to have this checked out. I mean, if trying to, sometimes also another cord. You know, sometimes those cords can get bent. I've seen folks, just like on USB drives, they leave them in the side of their computer, and they go to grab the laptop, they pick it up and go, and all of a sudden the USB drive gets bent, and then it won't read. So, I mean, there's a number of variables there that could fall into place that could be causing your issue.
Yep.
Well, like I said, I am in the car, so I believe I had an external power supply for the drive, and so it was all part of the mounting or whatever you call it, you know, chassis thing.
Right,
so I was able to plug it into the wall, then the USB would just go into the USB port, and it did spin up. So,
yep. All right. Well, then the other thing to check is that you plugged the drive in correctly, because if you've got the kind that takes those 25 or 40, whatever number is, little pins, you may have bent one putting it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if I mount it on another computer as a second drive, do I have to change anything? Like any, connectors or anything like
that? Nope. On SATA, nowadays, SATA just, there are no more jumpers playing around with, like the old, the older drives. SATA drives are beautiful. You just hook them up and...
If you had the old ATA drive, you would have to worry about...
Set a jumper, whether it's slave or a master.
But not with the SATAs.
Now, remember... Here, I'll throw you back even farther. Remember the old SCSI days?
Sure.
Yes, I do.
And if you didn't have a Terminator?
SCSI 1, 2, 3, 4, 5...
Up to 15,
yes.
Yeah. I started with PDP 1124s.
Nice!
Yes, a tech, and that's when I started, and now everything's gone so fast it's passed me up. So, so thank you very much, gentlemen.
Take care.
All right, good luck, bye. Andy. Yeah, it's not difficult to pull a laptop drive. It's not difficult to put it into an enclosure and set it on another machine. It's just if you haven't done it before, you need to be a little careful because many of them have those, what are they, 40 pins? I forget what the number of pins is, but it's lots of little pins.
The old PETA connector has got, 40 loose pins.
Right.
The SATA connectors are keyed. There's a little L shape on it. So theoretically, you can only plug it in the right way unless you push really hard.
Right.
Judy just called back. She cleared her cache. She's got the Soundbites page up.
Yay! Thanks, Judy. Cool. Good to know. All right. I think we've got time for Tony from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tony. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have an iMac, and I still have the Lion OS, and I just wonder if it's a good idea to upgrade to the latest, which I guess is Maverick.
The latest is Yosemite, and there's El Capitan coming out later this year. The biggest issue is how much memory do you have? Apple says 2 gigs is enough, which is technically true, the best kind of true. But you really want to have at least 4, if not 8. Most of the new computers these days come with 8, and we tend to see that's sort of what the OSs are assuming that you have.
Where could I have the memory upgrade done?
There are a lot of shops in town. I happen to work at one. Mac Ave in Victor at mac-av.com. The other issues, do you know if you have a Core 2 or a Core 3?
I don't know. It's about 5 years old.
Yeah. If you go to the Apple menu and choose About This Mac, it will tell you your operating system version, your processor, your RAM, so that it's kind of like system properties on Windows. It tells you this sort of stuff. In general, you don't want to get too far behind. If you go to buy a new program, it may not work with the older OS, which then often forces you to upgrade.
Although if you have a very old program, it may not work with the newer OS.
Right. That's the other side of the coin, is if you have third-party programs, or even some Apple programs, that are older, you may need to check with them to see if they're compatible with the new operating system.
If I bring the computer down to your shop, would you be able to install the memory and the program?
Yep, we can do all that for you and let you know if the computer needs anything else.
And you say there's something going on later this year. What was that?
There's a new operating system that they've announced is coming later this year. All they've said is fall. That probably means October. And they said it's going to clean up a lot of the issues that that Yosemite has. Hopefully it's going to make things run faster. We'll know more as we get closer to the release date.
So you're in Victor, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye. Thanks, Tony.
It's kind of the same issue on Windows. If you've got an old XP or Windows 7 machine that's 4 or 5 years old, you can probably run Windows 10. It's probably going to want more memory. It's probably going to want a better video card.
That's always been an issue that we've seen, which is that you can, but do you want to?
Right.
Is it going to be that optimum experience you expected you had when you first bought that computer?
Right.
Because when you first buy a computer, it's really, you're at least near the top of the line. So whatever operating system is out there probably runs pretty well and all works. But by the time you get to, a 4 or 5 year old machine, you're nowhere near the top anymore.
Yep. And a lot of times that can be passed down the family or even sold to finance a new computer.
Right, right. Our next caller is Alan from Webster, New York. Welcome, Alan. What's up?
Hi, how you doing? I got a hard drive question.
Okay, go.
I have a Hewlett-Packard Pavilion desktop that's about 5 years old, 1 terabyte Western Digital hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple months ago, it started to go into check disk every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So I ran check disk, I believe, SNR on it, and then I ran SpinWrite on it. It took 4 days. It's a 1 terabyte drive to run, and everything was fine for a couple of days. We don't leave the computer run all the time. And everything was fine for a couple of days. Then it did a Windows update and wouldn't shut down. And then I shut it down, and it ran check disk again. What do you recommend I do?
Hurry, run.
Yeah, because that you better start backing up that hard drive because that thing is starting getting ready to go. Yep.
But I haven't tested them. I've been listening to you.
Yeah, that hard drive is definitely getting ready to go.
Okay.
It's forming. If you were to look in there, you'll probably see on the directory a lot of lost folders. It'll say lost folders. And what it's doing is it's running those sums trying to reorganize the whole index in the computer and everything else because things are starting to get scrambled because slowly little bits and sectors on the drive are starting to go. They're failing.
Okay.
And just like any other electronic device, you know, they 5 years is probably pretty good getting out of, you know, the way the drives are made nowadays. But
the average lifetime of a hard drive is 5 years. And while you yourself are, of course, exceptional, your hard drive, I'm afraid, is average. So it's it's time to back up all those data, buy a new hard drive, reinstall your operating system, put all your data back. And remember, like I said, if you've never restored your data, you've never backed up your data. You don't know if you've backed up your data.
Yeah, I was listening, so I'm going to do that.
All right, excellent.
All right, thanks much.
Sure.
Right.
And that's just it, folks. It's like when you have a refrigerator that suddenly won't be cold so much anymore. You replace it. You know it's going. When you have a car that takes a half an hour to start in the morning and dies halfway to work, you know it's time to take a look at that, maybe replace it. It's the same warning system in your hard drive. When it starts doing checks
it's giving out warning signals.
It's a warning, and you can't ignore those warnings. It's the equivalent of chest pains for your hard drive. So
that red light's been on since I bought it.
Yeah, exactly. I just put tape over the red light. It's fine. But you need to pay attention to those things. We've said this many, many times, and nobody listens until their hard drive starts to go. But the average life expectancy of a hard drive is 5 years. That means some of them are dead out of the box. Some of them will last 10 years. But, you know, the smart money says you start getting to be 4 or 5 years old, it may well be time to replace that hard drive. At least make sure your backups are perfect.
Yeah, open a couple of files off of them, you know, as a spot check, just here and there. Just it's good. Restoring. If you have an empty hard drive, do a full restore and make sure it works, too.
That's exactly right. But at the very least, every once in a while, grab a file. And like I said, you can make a test file. Make it a big test file. And then every once in a while, just restore that file. See what happens. See what it looks like. If it's not right, you've got an issue, and you got to deal with that issue. So that's something to be aware of. All right. That music tells me that you've wasted an entire hour of your life. An entire hour of your life doing this, listening to this show. And for you slow learners, we're going to do it again on the other side of the hour. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be right back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Listen to us online or watch us on YouTube. And we'll be back very shortly with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We indeed are sound bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites and member-supported Jazz 90.1.
We did have a gentleman, Alan from Webster, that was on hold, but he got dropped. So if he... Oh, maybe he's calling back now.
Maybe he's calling back. In the meantime, you can give us a call. It's very simple. Just call 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Alternately, if you're outside the 585 calling area, you can give us a call at 1-800-790-0415. It's a free call for you. If you want to, of course, you can also text us at 585-209-9010. If we can actually get Dave to read that, we'll answer that question. It's hard to ask a really detailed question in 160 characters, so
yeah.
We would prefer you call in, but we have a caller right now. We have Stephen from Rochester, New York, on the line. Welcome, Stephen. What's up?
Hello. I'm calling about the problem I'm having with playing DVDs on a computer. Basically, I just got into Linux, something I wanted to do a long time ago. I installed both AV and Debian. Now, if I go into the AV Linux, the VLC player will play any DVD that I've bought, you know, through retail stores.
Right.
Now, if I go into Debian, for some reason, it'll only play certain old DVDs or the recent releases that are coming out on Mill Creek. Like, I got that I Dream of Genie series.
Yeah,
that'll play, but some of the newer DVDs won't play. Now, do you have any idea what the heck's the problem with that, why it won't play all of them, only some of them?
Yes, I do. Thanks for calling. Next caller.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Here's the thing. When you have a DVD, there is a codec, a program that decodes and codes certain bits and bytes from the drive to the computer and back again. There are certain codecs which are free, and therefore Debian will include them. And there are others which are encumbered by a copyright, and Debian will not include them. Avian will. So what happens is, under Debian, you should see in the software. I don't run Debian specifically, but under the software sources, you should see some that are non-free. You may have to go into the configuration and tell it to include non-free sources.
I see. Okay. You mean one of the files you're speaking of in general? Configuration
files? No. It's more than that. You know how you have a software center where you can load new software?
Oh, you mean the app?
Yeah.
The app,
The app place. That does way more than just apps. And
right.
One of the things it does is drivers as well. So in the setup, you'll see a bunch of things that you may not have checked, one of which, and you don't have to check all of them. In fact, you don't want to check all of them. But one of them should be non-free sources.
Okay.
And that needs to be activated so that when you go in and search for DVD players, you'll see more choices.
Does that mean he has to pay for those codecs?
No, interestingly enough. Some of them you do have to pay for, but not all of them, and most of them are available.
Yeah, that's the reason I asked, because I got an older version of Windows on, and the VLC player runs fine on that with anything, or the AV Linux, which is specifically designed for audio and visual. It's got some real neat music playing programs on it and that.
Right,
but
right.
For some reason, it's just the Debian. All right, thanks a lot.
Right.
I appreciate
it. And that's
it.
Why Debian is a purer... Debian considers itself a purer distribution, and it does not include non-free stuff, and that includes the codecs to play DVDs. Although VLC will play them, it needs those codecs, which are not free, and Debian will not load them by default. Here's the thing. It's legal to have and use the codecs as an individual. It is not legal for Debian to distribute them. So they will say, no, we're not distributing them. If you want them, you have to activate them and then download them and install them yourself. That's legal. It's a very weird copyright thing, and I don't think I like it at all, but that's the way it is. And so there you have it. I've been playing DVDs forever. I've been burning DVDs. I've been ripping legally DVDs that I've created or friends have created. So that all works, but I use Linux. I happen to use Ubuntu, which is a Debian derivative. But you have to say it's okay to use the non-free sources and then install those various codecs and things.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
There you go.
And speaking of codecs and ripping, the UK government has said it is illegal to rip CDs into your computer.
Right.
But that's even for your personal use.
So our UK listeners, you now can no longer rip CDs for your personal use.
So anyone who has an MP3 player full of songs is in serious violation of British law now.
Right.
Apparently, it goes back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so weird. Right now, it is. It seems at least to be legal, or at least not actively illegal, to rip CDs, your own CDs, mm-hmm. which you own for your personal listening pleasure, which means you can also upload them to Google Play Music or to iTunes or whatever you want to do, and that's still legal. It's just a different method of listening to stuff you've already paid for.
Right. If you start distributing those songs to other people, that's when it starts to get illegal. Starts
right.
to get or is illegal.
Right. Except in the UK, apparently, you can't even do that much.
Can't even do it yourself, yeah. There was actually, we had a problem in the U.S. Two laws were conflicting with each other. The Copyright Act of 1976 said it's legal to make a backup copy of your media. And then the Digital Millennium Copyright Act came along and said you cannot break the encryption. And so if you copy a DVD to your computer, right. most of the time you're unencrypting it.
Right.
And so you're legally allowed to back it up, but you're not allowed to decrypt it, so you're screwed.
And the problem is most people don't understand there is encryption on a DVD or
yeah.
a CD. Because when you play it, it just plays. There's yep. no serial number. There's no,
yeah.
you know, you see the warning go by, but you don't. You
which don't, they don't pay much attention
which
to, anyways.
Yeah.
Remember the T-shirts with the DVD encryption key on it?
Yeah. Yeah.
DVD John. DVD John for Linux. He wanted to write a DVD player for Linux.
Right.
So he looked in his DVD player, got the encryption key, and wrote a program that would play DVDs and got arrested.
And got arrested. Exactly. And that's where this whole business of non-free comes from. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Oh, well, a whole bunch of little comments and one tip on something that'll play DVDs and pretty much else, VLC media player.
Yeah, he said he had VLC.
Oh,
the problem is, without the right codec, he can't play. Even VLC won't work. It doesn't include the codec. You have to load that separately.
And sometimes VLC has those codecs themselves.
But not the specific ones
yeah.
he needed for some of those DVDs.
I've never needed one myself.
Yeah.
But,
well, and like he said,
anyway.
Some played fine, some did not. So there's a codec you need for those.
Yeah. Anyway, a couple weeks ago you said when Steve wasn't there, he was one step ahead of the law.
Yeah.
I think he was one step ahead of the Grim Reaper is what it sounded
yeah.
like.
He was mildly unwell for a while, yeah.
yeah.
He's getting much better, and we're all delighted
yeah.
that that's happening.
Has it occurred to you guys that since there was going to be a Windows 9, and they canned that and went straight to Windows 10, and you add to that that every other operating system is crummy?
Yeah.
I've had my first look at Windows 10, and this thing about the there's not going to be any other versions after this, it just always gets updated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They don't need to make any other versions. They've ruined it bad enough. There's no more need.
Yeah.
So.
No, I got to be honest. I've played a little bit with Windows 10. I don't get excited by operating systems anymore.
Neither do I.
Yeah,
you know?
Same here.
Work done.
But. Yeah, exactly. But so far, it seems to be pretty stable. It seems to be pretty useful. It's not my operating system of choice, but that doesn't mean it isn't a good one. And I am. Not impressed by some of the choices Microsoft has made, like the automatic updates without any control by the end user. But you know what? That's you get to deal with that on your own.
Well, anyway, for anybody that wants to play with Windows 10 without destroying your existing machine, again, VirtualBox is real easy to use.
Right.
And that's actually my question for today was I set up version 4 point whatever it was, the last version in 4.
Yeah.
And for the network, I've been using Bridge Adapter.
Yeah.
Okay, and that works fine for everything. Well, I'm upgraded to 5 because you need that to try and run Windows 10.
Right.
And when I select Bridge Adapter, it throws an error. It won't let me do that. And when I use NAT, I haven't been able to find my network in or out from Windows 10.
Yeah, there's a third choice, which is the one I used. What's it called? Network. Oh, NAT. Did you try NAT? Network?
Yeah, that's the one I've been using. That's the default. And it doesn't, I tried all of them, basically, other than no adapter at all. NAT, and then there's NAT Network.
Yep.
That didn't work. Bridge Adapter fails. And there was another one that didn't appear to work either.
Internal networking or host-only networking. Yeah.
I'll have to try the wiki or the news group.
Yeah, I used NAT and it worked fine for me, but that was under Linux. I put a VirtualBox with Linux on my thing. I haven't tried it under another version of Windows. And what you're finding is something like Bridge Networking isn't finding any adapters, right?
Well, it there's a little error message in the when you're in the settings menu down at the bottom, but it doesn't say what the real problem is. When I tried the Windows 10 troubleshooter, it said that there are two different devices using NAT. And that's probably because my router, I use NAT.
Yeah, but mine does too.
Yeah.
Is your router in your computer?
No.
Yeah.
It's standalone.
What it sounds like is you're running two different VirtualBox programs simultaneously. Hmm. That's what it sounds like, right?
That's what the VirtualBox thinks. That's what I'm doing, and Windows seems to see it that way.
Now,
did you have another virtual machine that you suspended rather than quit?
No.
Wrong answer.
That was absolutely the wrong answer. And again, just to be thorough, have you turned the machine off since you installed Windows 10 on it?
Pretty sure I have, although I couldn't swear to that. But
well, it may be that something's hung up.
Yeah, something in the host.
Right. So if you actually shut down, reboot your machine.
Yeah.
Any lingering VirtualBox stuff will be.
I am sure I did because when thunderstorms come,
yeah,
I unplug everything.
Yeah, we had a doozy a while ago.
That was in the last couple of days there. So
yeah.
Huh.
I honestly don't know what to tell you. Network for me.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I've tried it, and I'm not entirely certain why. I just simply don't have an answer for it. I'm seeing, basically VirtualBox, their ticket system shows some Windows 10 issues here and there, but most of them seem to be resolvable with a reboot, although, yeah.
Well, I'll keep playing with it. The fact that you're saying that does work, that at least that's some kind of a clue.
Right. Sorry.
Well, thanks. Yep.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And we have Ed from Henrietta, New York on the line. Welcome, Ed. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Morning, afternoon, guys. I'm just curious. I have a DVD, and I wanted to make a backup, like burn another one.
Yeah.
And I use the computers at the library, and I've talked to several people at the library and got several different answers. One lady said that you'd need to get I'd have to get an external hard drive, and you can do it that way. But my question is, number one, can it be done? And what kind of extra hardware would I need to get that accomplished?
Okay, so first, there are copyright issues.
Mm-hmm.
So you must have the right to copy it. Once you have that right, let's say it's a CD, a DVD that a friend made for you of non-copyrighted material or material that he or she copyrighted and then gave you the right to copy. So let's say you have that.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you need is a program that will do the ripping.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a DVD ripper. And I don't know if those are installed on any library computers.
No.
I doubt it highly, but you would need those.
Mm-hmm.
Or on, obviously, your own computer.
Right.
Then
right.
you need a medium onto which to save the ripped material. Again, you probably can't save it on a drive at the library.
Mm-mm.
You would need a large flash drive of your own to copy it onto.
Yeah, right. A full DVD is generally about 8 gigabytes.
Well, these are like several chapters. That's the only thing I
yeah.
want. You know.
So many of the ripping software will compress the video while it rips it so it doesn't take up the full 8 gigabytes as well.
Mm-hmm. It loses a little bit of the clarity in the full picture, but not enough to be really noticeable by the average person.
So you'd go, assuming that they've got the program to do it, then you go from the flash drive, and then what would you do next?
Depending on how you rip it, you can often rip it to an MP4, which is a standardly playable file, and then you can take that to another machine and either double-click it and watch it through VLC or maybe even Windows Media Player, open it up in your browser, that sort of fare. So
right, but I mean, how do you physically though make a copy of it once it's say it's on the flash drive?
Once it's on the flash drive, it's just a file. So exactly the same way you would copy any other file, you can copy that file.
But the thing of it is though, is he's got to have the proper software,
right,
to do it,
the right?
Because if he's got a DVD, even if it's only a couple of chapters, it's got protection on it. He can sit there and copy it, and it's going to copy over, but when he tries to play it, it's going to give him an error because it's copy protected.
Mm. Right. So here's the deal. When you have data on a DVD, it's in multiple files. There's a video file. There's a vocal file. There may be two or three vocal files. And there's the chapter finding and sequencing software. There's a whole bunch of stuff on a DVD. But often when you rip a DVD, one of the choices is rip it to a playable file. Rip it. They often call it an MP4 or what's the other word they use?
H.264.
And once you have done that, then it is a single double-clickable file on your flash drive or that which you can then copy to a hard drive or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that then you just need a program that will play that type of file. Windows Media Player will do it. VLC will do it. Some browsers will do it directly. So you shouldn't have trouble once you have correctly ripped the file, once you've correctly ripped the chapter you want. It becomes a file, a standard file, which you can then treat as any other file. Copy it, back it up, delete it, whatever you want to do with it.
So then you'd have to go to, say, like wherever and buy an external hard drive and just stick it into one of those ports and it does it automatically once you're on the medias, the Windows Media Player?
Nothing is automatic, of course, but you would then have to, when you go to rip it, one of the things it will ask you is where do you want to put the file?
Mm-hmm.
And you just tell it that external drive or flash drive or whatever it happens to be. You can get 16 gig flash drives, and then that's plenty for a chapter. It's
you think 8's enough, or should I get 16?
Eight is enough.
Yeah, 8's generally the maximum of a DVD.
Yeah, it's better to have more than enough room than not enough room.
Yeah. If you're and you say you're not ripping a whole DVD.
No, it's only about 4 or 5 chapters at the max.
Well, in that case, an 8 gig may do it, but, you know, don't hold me to that because I haven't seen the DVD.
Well, yeah, the chapters are only, like, literally each one maybe a minute and a half long.
Yeah, so 8 gig should be enough.
Yeah.
But
I do need the the piece of hardware to plug into the port, right?
For
the
well, you also need the software.
Oh, yeah. That's their problem, I think. I'll ask them.
Yeah, if they don't have the software, and it's likely they don't,
yeah.
Then I don't know what to tell you.
Gotcha. Okay, that's what I want to know. I appreciate that.
There you go, Ed. Yeah, and again, let me remind everyone that that you cannot rip a DVD to which you do not have a copyright, the right to copy it. That means. It's English.
And that's what we were talking about earlier. The copyright law gives you the legal right to make a backup, but the Digital Millennium Copyright Act prevents you from removing the encryption.
Right. Well, and it's an interesting gray area. Because if in fact that DVD was created by a friend of his,
right,
who has given him the right to make a copy,
yep,
then does the Digital Millennium Copyright Act even come into play there?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. Probably. I don't even play one on television yep. anymore. So really, if you want to know the actual answer, you're going to want to call one of the lawyers and find out from them. Certainly... my buddy Bob would be the guy to call. I'm not allowed to tell you more than that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roy from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Roy. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Let's see. I'm running Windows 7.
Yep.
But I've been searching my C drive for things, and, of course, it takes a long time, and then a message comes up and says, if I index the drive, it would be a lot faster.
Yep.
Okay, now, as far as I know, I haven't indexed it. So if I do index it, where is that index held? You know where it's stored?
Deep within the Windows directory. Two things you need to know. First, the indices take up a lot of space. So you better have a lot of extra space on your hard drive.
Mm.
The second thing is they do really speed up searches. I mean, they do really speed up searches. But that third thing is that it will index in the background. Once you turn indexing on, those indices get updated regularly in the background, which may slow your machine down. Now, again, if your machine is fast enough, that's not even noticeable, right? But if your machine is marginal, then you're really going to notice that slowdown.
So the best thing to do is perhaps not index an entire drive, but just indicate index part of the drive that you're interested in?
Specific folders, yeah. Don't search the whole hard drive. Search just the user folder, for example.
Okay.
Right. Now, yes, because you don't... how often do you actually search for parts of the Windows operating system? My suspicion is never.
The Windows system itself?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. So really what you want to index is your user directory. Because that's where you keep your files and things, and that's what you're really searching for.
Right, yeah, good enough.
Right.
So this is going to be a good-sized file? Is it...
depends on how much data you have.
Well, I'm trying to say, would it be a certain percentage?
As to what that exact percentage is, I can't tell you, but it could be fairly significant. It could be 10%, 15%, 20%, depending on what you have and what sort of, it depends on what kind of files you have, right? I mean.
Sure, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so it could be 10%, 20%, could be 50%. But it probably won't go much over 50%, I don't think.
Okay, now you didn't really say where the file would be located.
Well,
you say deep within.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah.
Oh, you don't know? I haven't done it, so it may come back and ask me where to put it. I don't know.
The search index is
all users
is a hidden folder.
Profile Microsoft Search Data Applications Windows.edb.
Right.
So it's in an invisible folder that you're not supposed to mess with.
Yep. It's hidden.
Right. Program data.
It's just like the
Microsoft
registry. They don't want you
data.
Playing around with it.
Right.
Because if you play around with it and muck something up, your whole system's not going to work.
Right. It's a hidden system folder.
Can it be deleted somehow?
There are ways you can turn on and off indexing.
So if you turn it off, it gets erased?
Right, and then next time you start it up again, well, there you go all over again.
Then you got to take the time
but
to do it, right?
The real question becomes, why do you care where it's kept?
Well, I don't know. I just like to know, that's all.
Right, okay, then yes, that's where it's kept. It's in a hidden file.
Yeah.
Deep inside Microsoft's OS. If you're looking to, if you're worried about the amount of storage space you have left in your hard drive, that's a legitimate concern. If you're worried about a performance hit, that's a legitimate concern. Again, if your machine is fairly new, quad-core processor, 8 gigs of RAM, yada, 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 you're probably not going to notice it after the initial indexing.
Right.
The initial indexing is just going to slow your system down, get over it.
Let it run overnight.
That's going to happen, right. But once that's happened, theoretically, you may see, now what makes people crazy is the sort of people who obsessively look at their CPU usage. Indexing,
why is idle taking up 99% of my CPU?
Right, because that under idle is indexing. Because Microsoft is fairly stupid about the way they label things. But you will find that your CPU is fairly pegged fairly regularly, particularly when you first turn your machine on.
Okay, if you just add a file to the database, it doesn't re-index the whole database. It just
No, it adds that file to the index,
okay.
So you'll get a small hit.
Yeah.
And probably the CPU will go to 100%, but basically it just needs to add that one file to the index. It does make searching much, much easier.
Yeah. Well, I know some of the things I search for, might take 20 minutes.
Right.
On the
depending
the
on
index.
How fast your machine is, how much RAM you have, how many files you've got.
And what you're telling it to search. If you're telling
it
to search the entire hard drive, then
yeah.
Right, and that's a waste, because if you're looking for, let's say, the phrase Red Cross donation, right? If you're actually searching the Windows directory for that, that's an absolute waste of time. It's never going to be there. All you need to search is your documents directory.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good overview.
There you go.
Thanks a lot.
Yep. I've never been a fan of indexing and searching on my machine.
Mm-mm.
But I'll tell you, ever since I've started using Google Drive,
mm-hmm.
I just search now. Because Google, of course, what are they known for? Search.
Mm-hmm.
So in the background, they're indexing my drive. My files.
All right,
and like
care
I said, I've got 15,000 files out there.
Mm-hmm.
When I search for something, those answers come up pretty instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of impressed. Depending on how I narrow my search, I may get some extraneous junk in there. But so what? The fact is that
imagine without it?
Right. I now do see the benefits of being able to search. In fact, now that I have Google Photos, the ability to search my photos
mm-hmm.
is kind of empowering. It's really very cool.
Yeah.
And so having all of that stuff available to index and search is kind of seductive, and I get that. I understand exactly why Roy is doing what he's doing. And you know, originally, for example, Google Drive didn't have folders.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't, although they look and act like folders, so you can call them folders. Everything was essentially just flat in your system because Google assumed people were going to search.
Oh, yeah.
It's not how people's minds work. You know, if I'm doing a project for a specific person or company or event, I'll create a folder for that person or company or event.
Mm-hmm.
Put all the files in it so I know where they are. And yes, I could do some searching, but this is not the way my mind works after, you know, umpty-ump years of doing it on Windows or Linux or anybody else's machines.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 40 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member-supported Jazz, 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And,
yeah, we only got a couple more weeks before Labor Day.
That's right.
And then we start 26 years.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. You can see that we've been on the air for 25 years, 11 months, and 12 days on our website. And you're right, we'll be starting our 20...
This year is going by so fast.
Right.
I mean, here it's August already, and it's like...
It was just May. Wasn't it just May like 5 minutes ago?
I remember April.
Yeah.
But no, the reason I bring that up is because I had another listener stop by at the place that I work at and say, geez, are you guys still on? We go, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, yeah, I tell them, yeah, we're over in Jazz 90.1. How long have you guys been doing it? 25 years. Oh, wait. No, we're coming up on 26. We're going to start 26. Wow, that's a long time.
Yep.
And he was telling his other friend, you got to listen to these guys. These guys are fantastic.
And that brings up a point. Each and every one of you listening, we hear from people all the time who say, I wish you guys were still on the air. Well, you know, we've moved several times, and understandably, the X station doesn't want to promote a rival, so they don't tell people where we are. So that's your job. If you've got friends who are technically inclined, or friends who you would like to have stop calling you regularly, tell them about the show. Point them at the archives. Remind them that they can call in Saturdays from noon to two, and let us help them out for you as you help them out yourself regularly. So that's your job. That's your homework for the week. We expect a full report next week. How many people you've turned on to Soundbites?
There will be a test.
There will be a test. Life is a test. Every day is a test.
This will be on the test.
Right. Okay, here's a little more fuel for the fire, people. Windows 10 sends identifiable information to Microsoft even if a user turns off Bing search and the Cortana features and activates the software's privacy protection settings. Analysis by technology site Ars Technica has shown that Windows 10 still makes contact with Microsoft even when these features are disabled. Although some of this is simple and non-identifiable testing for an internet connection. However, other bits of information sent to and requested from Microsoft, including those associated with the company's cloud storage service OneDrive and to an unknown content delivery network, have a user identification number attached. The machines used for the test were using a local login to Windows 10, not a Microsoft account, and had OneDrive, Cortana, Live Tiles, and every other privacy-protecting setting active. Windows 10 also downloaded new tile information from its MSN News and Information Service, despite the Live Tile feature not being active on the test machine. The request had no identifiable information, but also was not encrypted. The report will add more fuel to the debate about Windows 10 and privacy, after Microsoft came under fire for the default settings in its new operating system.
As part of delivering Windows 10 as a service, updates may be delivered to provide ongoing new features to Bing search, such as new visual layouts, styles, and search codes, said Microsoft. No query or search usable usage data is sent to Microsoft. in accordance with the customer's chosen privacy settings. This also applies to searching offline for items such as apps, files, and settings on the devices. However, the information sent to and requested from Microsoft after customers activated privacy-protecting settings was not related to search. Microsoft did not elaborate on what purpose the communications have or whether it stores or tracks the data, which includes machine identification numbers. So, do you worry about Microsoft grabbing identifiable data from your computer? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
Trust us. We're Microsoft.
Trust us. We're Microsoft. There are a lot of operating systems out there, and almost all of them are willing to accept data from you. For example, on my Ubuntu system, when you install it, and of course you can go in and change this later, one of the questions it says is, do you want to send anonymous data to Ubuntu to help us understand better what you're doing and make a better operating system? Well, okay, but as long as it's anonymous.
Yeah.
What's happened? I don't mind doing that. I mean, I want them to make the best operating system possible, and if I can be lumped in with a whole bunch of other stuff anonymously to help them improve what they do, then I'm all for that. But I'm just not overly thrilled with the idea that identifiable information is being sent, and they can track me back, and particularly when, as it says here, somewhere in here, one of the places they're sending it to is an unknown content delivery network. That's ads, people. That's ads. That's how that works. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Judy from Webster, New York. Welcome, Judy. What's up?
Well, I have a couple of questions.
Go.
Number one, Windows 10, at one time when I was listening to your program, you said there would be a $100 maintenance fee after the first year. Is that correct?
Not entirely accurate. What Microsoft is saying is that Windows 10 is free right now. And they're saying for the first year that it's available, anyone can download it for free. If you wait till after that first year to download it, then it won't be free anymore. You will have to go to a store and buy a copy.
Okay.
Which is $100 for home, and I think $200
for Ultimate,
yeah,
or Pro, whatever it is.
For the enterprise type version. Okay. But we don't know what happens after that. Windows has announced that this is the last version of Windows that will have a number. The next version will just be called Windows and will be solely a subscription service. That is to say, you will pay a yearly fee to run the operating system. We don't know what that fee is going to be. Or when it will start.
All right. My next question is, you always talk about a power backup.
Yeah.
Well, I purchased one because my alarm people told me to purchase one so that I wouldn't have any outages when my alarm was on.
Right.
He told me all I had to do was plug in the modem. Now, when I look at the instructions on this power pack, it looks like I have to do more than that.
Well, there should be several outlets on that box, and whatever device you want to run off the battery when your main power fails, you plug it in to that box. Sometimes there'll be two banks of outlets, and only one of them will be marked battery. So it's the other one is just a regular surge protector. So you'll need to plug your alarm system into that battery pack that on the side that it says battery. And it wouldn't be a bad idea, if you can, to plug your computer into that battery too. In many cases, there's also a USB cord that will plug that that battery into your computer. So if the main power fails, basically the power strip can tell the computer and shut down normally instead of crashing with no power.
See what well, the what
I see the cable, and the my issue, or maybe I'm not thinking correctly, the alarm is tied into the phone line. The phone line is plugged into the modem.
Right.
Oh, you have a digital phone. Apparently. Is it with Time Warner?
Yes.
Time Warner VoIP. Oh, yeah, because the phone system has its own power and doesn't need this.
That would be Frontier with a landline.
Right. So, yeah, so you need to plug your Time Warner cable modem into the battery. And if the alarm has its own separate power cord, you need to plug that into the battery as well.
Right. See, the alarm company is only interested in keeping your alarm running. They don't have anything to do with your computer. So you're really looking at two entirely separate things.
By plugging just the modem in, I'm not protecting my computer?
Right. So what the alarm company has told you is that, you see, if you lose power, your alarm doesn't work anymore.
In fact, a lot of times it goes off and the police show up. We've had that happen at our office.
Right, right. So what you want to do is have a battery backup for the alarm system that includes the modem that actually provides your phone service.
Okay.
Now, if that's all the alarm company is interested in, and so that's the only instructions they gave you.
Okay.
If you want to also protect your computer, then you can also plug that into the uninterruptible power supply.
If they're close enough to each other to do that, you may need to get two of them.
Yeah, it is close enough. And, you know, in reading through the literature, and then it also said I had to download something for the battery pack.
Right, for the computer. That's an entirely separate issue. Unfortunately, we're out of time, Judy, and I'm so sorry. You got to call earlier next week.
Well, I tried, but I couldn't remember the phone number.
Okay. I'm sorry. We're done. We're going to be back next week on Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.